Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/Watson Assistant.
This is DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg.
You can listen to us anywhere. Just click Listen Live at ESPNNewYork.com. Find 98.7 ESPN on the ESPN app or the TuneIn app, or simply tell your smart speaker, play ESPN New York at 98.7 ESPN New York. We go where you go. Chris, are you ready for Andy from Merrick to barrage you with probably a draft question from the 05 season?
Yeah, I'm ready for it, Dave. The question is, are you and Rick ready for it?
We're as ready as we're ever going to be, so okay. Let's bring him on. Andy from Merrick. Good morning, Andy. How are you?
Good morning, guys. You know, with the draft in the rearview mirror, I'm going to broaden your questions out a bit, okay?
Wow.
Chris, if I'm going to ask you to put on your ACC hat, ready?
Let's do it.
NC State's Phillip Rivers holds the ACC record for most career passing yards, but only ranks number two in career touchdown passes. Who's the ACC's all-time passing touchdown leader?
Ooh, this is a good one. ACC all-time passing touchdown leader. Oh, let's go here. Ooh.
Was he a Jet at all, Andy?
Oh, Dave, you're helping him out.
Sorry.
Oh, would that be one Boomer Esiason?
No. Clemson sixth round pick Taj Boyd.
Ah, Taj Boyd, yep.
All right. Yep. Rick, I tortured you with Jet questions for the last 2 weeks. We're going to put you back on the ice.
Okay, back on the ice. I like that. All right, here we go.
Your 902 career save percentage actually ranks you in the top 100 all time among goaltenders in the National. My question to you, straight up, who has the highest career regular season save percentage?
Hasek.
You got it.
Nice.
Oh, no delay there.
Beautiful. I mean, it was seamless. Right, it was like Mel Kiper. You know what? Mel Kiper was just on for 20 minutes, and he just seamlessly talks and talks and talks, and he doesn't skip a beat, and you picked up right on that, Rick. Beautifully done. Beautifully done.
All right, we would be otherwise ankle deep into baseball season right now, so put on your baseball hat.
Oh, I don't like this.
In MLB history, there have been four players who have 400-plus homers and 10-plus gold gloves. Three of them, Griffey Jr., Schmidt, and Willie Mays, are all in the Hall of Fame. Who's the fourth guy in the club but not in Cooperstown?
Oh, my God.
I think I know this one.
Do you really?
I think I know this one. Yeah.
Oof. Is it Andrew Jones?
Boom.
Yes.
Yes, sir. Great
How
job,
he's not in the Hall of Fame
healthy.
Is a joke.
Yeah,
it's
it is joke. Ridiculous. Thank you, Andy. Terrific, terrific questions. I like that he mixed it up today.
Yeah, I do too. All right, that's what he does. That's why he still has a segment, man, because he realizes that we're getting a little stale and he wants to come into a new week and bring it.
I mean, you know, Chris with the 05 draft, you with the Jets, me with the Giants, but not today. Today, Chris, just ACC. You, back to hockey. Me, Major League Baseball. I mean, sensationally done. He does a very nice job.
I think he could have given me five guesses. I never would have got Taj Boyd.
Yeah, that was a tough one.
Yeah.
That was a statement question. He wanted to have at least one wrong.
He set the tone.
He wanted to bring control back in the relationship with Chris. Because Chris has been beating him up lately.
Yeah, I mean, we've been doing pretty good, but Chris has been on a roll. So he's like, you know what? Let's embarrass Chris quick, and then at least I'll get that out of the way. So whatever happens after that is just the rest is gravy.
Hey, two out of three ain't bad.
Yeah.
Two out of three ain't bad. We'll take
it. No, listen, the question he asked you was brutal.
Yeah.
Taj Boyd's
You know what else is brutal, Dave?
What?
What John Mara said over the weekend about his football team. Did you hear that?
Tell me.
John Mara, this is reported by Steve Servia of the New York Post. He said yesterday, we better be a better team this year.
I did see that, yeah.
Better. Yeah. Like this is somebody that is as conservative as anyone in the National Football League from the ownership standpoint. And for him to go out there and make that kind of statement, Those are strong words, Dave. That's something that Giants fans better pay attention to, and Dave Gettleman in particular. I mean, we joke around about him saying that he needed to improve his batting average, but I'm telling you, when the owner comes out and says something like that, there has to be the expectation that the team is going to improve significantly from where they were at last year.
But here's the thing. Do you look at the Giants just, you know, on paper right now, do you look at the Giants and think that they're going to be significantly improved? We've gone through their schedule. They still have gaping holes. I don't know how they get to the quarterback, right? I mean, their linebackers might be better, but they're not good. I think the secondary takes a big jump. But, I mean, realistically, well, and I guess I'd almost need it defined, what's much better? Like, does that mean you have to win 8 games? Does that mean you have to be competitive throughout the season? Because I can't see. I think the over-under, Rick, is 5.5 out in Vegas. So what's much better coming into this season?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, is it the 6th overall pick as opposed to the 4th overall pick? I mean, you hit it. I mean, when you look at their schedule, on top of the fact that, you know, with, you know, the pandemic and the inability to have OTAs, and we'll see what training camp looks like, you got a quarterback in his second year trying to learn a whole new system with a head coach that's never been a head coach before. I mean, you can say that you want to be better, but how realistic is that?
Yeah, I don't know how realistic it's going to be, but I mean, I think if Dave Gettleman and his team don't show significant improvement in terms of wins, then I think it could be very real that Dave Gettleman won't be the general manager of the Giants past 2020. And I guess
that's the case.
That's the part of it that made me kind of pay attention. It's just like when the owner comes out and makes a statement like that, I mean, there's something in his mind in terms of a measurable of what this team should be in 2020. Now, we realize that we're in unprecedented times. You got a new coach, no offseason program, no OTAs, no minicamp and all of that stuff. But it doesn't sound like John Mara is willing to give the team a pass.
Okay, so in saying that, though, just take the emotions out of it, because he's embarrassed. I get it. I mean, the ownership for the Giants has been embarrassed. I mean, we get it. But, like, just take the emotion out of it for a second. When you just go through all the things that you just said, right, realistically, when you look at their schedule, you look at the amount of talent, circumstances, new system, head coach, offensive system, defense, all that, all in, it's not really that realistic to say we have to be significantly better. So if that's the case, and we all realize that the chances of them being significantly better are probably slim, then why would you, right, and all the emphasis now, because you just hired Joe Judge, is going to be on the GM, why would you then let him continue to be your GM? If that's the mandate, and we don't think it's an achievable mandate, and he's going to get fired, why would you just not have fired him when you fired Pat Shurmur then?
I mean, it makes no sense. And you could have started clean. You could have had a head coach, GM combination coming together, two guys that you know, worked in conjunction with each other, instead of coming down with this. And John Mara is not the kind of owner, Chris, and you know this better than anyone, that just randomly, it's not Jerry Jones, where he's doing a weekly talk show and he's spouting stuff all the time. If he says something, you really have to listen. I don't know how it's realistic to think that this team is going to be considerably better this coming season.
No, Dave, I don't see it. I still think they've got to improve the defensive side of the ball, especially the front seven. I think the back end will be okay. You got McKinney to be a true free safety alongside Jabril Peppers, who's more of a guy that plays in the box close to the line of scrimmage. DeAndre Baker has to be better. He can't be worse than what he was in his rookie year. And you got a veteran in James Bradbury. The secondary should be better. But defensively, they're still missing some key pieces, especially when you consider them not having a dominant edge pass rusher. Offensively, that's getting pretty close to a complete unit. It really is. I mean, they got Andrew Thomas, who should be a plug-and-play tackle, Nate Solder, Will Hernandez, Kevin Zeitler. We'll figure out what they're going to do at the center position right now with Spencer Pulley. But I feel like their offense is ready to roll. But in terms of what that means with the overall record, I mean, Dave, they could make significant improvement and still be a team that has a losing record. They could be 7-9 and make significant improvement.
And maybe that is significant improvement.
And maybe that is.
Maybe going 7-9 checks the boxes.
No, it does, Dave. But here's what I will say. 7-9, a losing record. I mean, I guess I look at it from the standpoint of if John Mara was going to make a statement as strong as he did yesterday, I don't think that 7-9 would be something where he feels really, really good about. It just doesn't seem like that would be the case.
So if I give you 7-9, Rick, And you look at Daniel Jones through year two and you say, boy, he's a good quarterback. And you feel like the Giants are in really good hands moving forward. Is that enough to continue along with Dave Gettleman as GM?
Would that be enough for me?
I mean, I just don't know what it means to be much better this season.
But see, that's the problem. I mean, it's so open-ended. I mean, there's really no clear definition of what that means. I mean, what does that mean? That, you know, Andrew Thomas all of a sudden steps in and he's, you know, he contributes right away? I mean, that'd be a check mark for Dave Gettleman. Daniel Jones has a much better season than he had last year. Yeah, I mean, those are all positive things. But, I mean, if he's concerned about solely the record being considerably better, I don't know if that's a fair ask at this point with what's going on. Because you're nowhere near the Cowboys. You're nowhere near the Cowboys.
No.
We can all agree on that.
Yeah.
You're nowhere near the Eagles. Mm-mm. I mean, we'll see what happens in Washington. I mean, that defense is going to be stout, to say the very least. So, I mean, even your own division, you're what? Maybe third, probably closer to fourth as far as your division?
Yeah.
So, I mean, how many games are you going to win?
And that's the question, Rick. I think that's ultimately what it comes down to. But to make a statement and say, we better be a better team this year, like we better be, I don't know. That's a strong statement. I think you would have to have some strong performances on the field and a strong record to suggest that, you know, Dave Gettleman has hurdled the bar to clear in this situation. And I don't know that a losing record is going to be enough to sell ownership on the fact that he should be the general manager beyond this upcoming season.
Well, maybe I'm missing something, which does happen probably more often than not. But not have a losing record means that you're looking at this team as 8-8 or better. And I find it, Chris, hard to believe that this is a 500 or better football team. And I'll tell you what, if they are, then Joe Judge has done a sensational job in his first year with this team.
Well, I mean, I think they do have high hopes for Joe Judge. I mean, they said that they were blown away by the interview when he was, you know, throwing his hat in the ring for the job. So, I mean, I feel like from what you're looking at from a coaching perspective and developing a young guy that you can have as the guy on the sideline for the next decade plus, I think Joe Judge has everything that you're looking for in terms of the pedigree, but he's still got to be supported by a talented roster. And right now, there's a lot of work that needs to be done in order to improve the talent level and get it on par with even the teams in your division. So, yeah, I'm with you. To say that this team is going to be 500 or better, I don't feel comfortable saying that. But I also recognize that Dave Gettleman is going to have to do a hell of a lot better than 4-12, 5-11 in order to keep his job. And I don't know if you can say that 7-9 is a hell of a lot better than that.
Yeah, I just think you missed the perfect opportunity. I mean, you sat there and watched how it unfolded with the New York Jets. And I think you had the perfect opportunity. And it would have been a justifiable decision if you just said, okay, we're going to clean house. I mean, the second Dave Gettleman, when you ask him, what should we do at coach? He says, I think we should keep Pat Shurmur. You guys disagree. You go a different direction. And then on top of it, the way you see the Leonard Williams trade, you know, in front of your face play out, and now you're paying him $16 million a year. I mean, there was every reason to move on from Dave Gettleman, and they decided not to.
Yeah, but now they come out with almost a semi-edict of what the expectations are for this season. It just doesn't seem like it really adds up. 800-919-3776. Let's go to Ira in Staten Island. Good morning, Ira. You're next up on 98.7.
Hey. Hey, good morning, Dave. Good morning, fellas. How are you? Good spot there with Mel, by the way. You know, the way I look at it, listen, you know, would I have liked a second receiver? Of course. But, you know, it's clear that Douglas Stockwood is bored. And in the fourth round or the third round, if he felt valuable for a receiver, he would have taken him at that point. So to me, listen, you look at the draft, nobody really knows for 2 or 3 years down the road anyway. He addressed every spot except tight end. They really didn't need that. So he filled in a lot of holes. If he hits on 4 or 5 of these players, it's going to be good. So time will tell. Mims, listen, I don't like Baylor products. I told Dave that Saturday. He had a lot of upside. Reminds me of a faster Brandon Marshall, long arms. You go up and get the ball. Hopefully, Hines Ward could develop him. And the end of the day, listen, you want to nitpick with the quarterback. They must have saw value in him. I have no problem. I still think they'll get a veteran. But I think what Douglas needs to do now, between now and the start of training camp, he does need to bring back a veteran receiver, whether it's a DeMario Thomas, just because he's familiar with Gase's playbook. Because if you do look at the skilled players, you know, if Perriman or Mims underperform, then they're going to be in a lot of trouble. So I do think you do have to have a veteran as insurance.
Yeah, but here's the thing, though, Ira, and I appreciate the phone call. And, you know, I looked at you know, Bryce Hall in the fifth round. I mean, as far as value is concerned, it's a good pick. But then you have, I mean, Tyler Johnson, who I think is a good wide receiver. He's available. And I actually like the kid because you still really don't have a pass rush. I actually like the kid, Brad and I, that the Cowboys drafted. Mm-hmm. I think he's got a lot of upside in the fifth round. I thought that was a good pick. Here's what I'll say, though. Just, I mean, as an exercise for anyone that's listening, and this is not meant to be a criticism of Joe Douglas. I think he did a really good job. Go through the young quarterbacks in the NFL and the weapons that they have around them right now. What they just did in Denver. What they just did for Josh Allen in Buffalo. I mean, go through the list, really. I mean, go through the list of young quarterbacks and look at the amount of talent they have surrounding those guys. There's nowhere, the Jets are nowhere near. Nowhere near. Baker Mayfield, tons of talent. I mean, you name these guys, these young guys that you're relying on.
Kyler
they
Murray.
Have weapons. Yeah, look what they just did. Sam Darnold doesn't have that luxury, unfortunately.
No, and it just feels like you're at a point now where you can surround him with a lot of weapons just because you're not paying him a whole lot of money. So you would think that you would put a lot of skill position guys around him. You'd be able to add to that group significantly in free agency, and that's not what the Jets did. That's not what they've done over the past couple of years. So, I mean, outside of Le'Veon Bell, you really don't have anybody in that core that's a true difference maker. And I feel like they've got a long ways to go in terms of being able to develop, you know, that second go-to guy and that focal point for the passing game for their young quarterback.
Carlos,
hell,
and
look
Queen.
At the Cincinnati.
Carlos, you're next up on 98.7. Yeah,
Dave, look at the Cincinnati Bengals. I mean, look at the weapons that Joe Burrow has.
Yeah, well, they drafted T. Higgins, and Mel loves that pick, and they also still have A.J. Green. Yeah, there you're right. I mean, I'm not going to argue with you. Forget about young quarterback, Rick. If I went throughout the NFL and said, what team has the least impressive skill position players, period, I think the Jets would be in that conversation.
Yeah, I mean, even the teams that are, I mean, don't really have a plethora of weapons.
I mean, pick a team.
Green Bay doesn't have a plethora of weapons, but they have one of the greatest of all time, and on top of it, they have Davante Adams. I mean, at least they have a clear-cut number one. I mean, Jameson Crowder is probably their clear-cut number one, but he's not, I mean, he's not a legitimate number one wide receiver.
Jameson Crowder on a good team is a third wide receiver, right?
Yeah, the same as, I mean, Perriman was an okay third option in Tampa. So yeah, I mean, I'm just saying you're asking your young quarterback to do a whole hell of a lot. I can get it if you're already established. If you're Russell Wilson or, you know, Aaron Rodgers or one of these quarterbacks that have, you know, are one of the, you know, some of the best in the game, they can make
one of these quarterbacks that you're paying $30+ million a year to. You're not doing
exactly
that.
Exactly right. Exactly so, right. Like they can make, like Russell Wilson can make, you know, DK Metcalf look great. Like he's that good. Sam Darnold's not, I mean, hopefully he gets there, but at this point in his third year, he's not there yet.
Oh, and you haven't surrounded him with stud talent, so we'll see. We'll see. Let's go to Carlos in Queens. Carlos, you're next up on 98.7.
Hey, good morning, guys. Thanks for taking the call. I'm a Giants fan, so full disclosure there, but I do look at the Jets draft, and I think it's okay. The only thing is, if I was a Jets fan, I'd be mildly concerned about that backup quarterback position with Sam Darnold's progression going into third year. If Darnold goes down again, I think you're in the same situation you were last year, simply because James Morgan, I didn't know who he was. I'm sure a lot of fans didn't know who James Morgan was before the draft this weekend. Why not take a flyer on Jake Fromm? I think that's a borderline mistake by Douglas, considering he also went in the division to Buffalo. I'm not sure why.
Upside. Morgan upside. Upside. He took James Morgan because of the upside. James Morgan, as far as his arm talent, has more upside than Fromm.
Yeah, and I don't have an issue with Morgan over Fromm. I do have an issue, and thanks for the call, Carlos, a huge issue. And I don't know what happens, but if you go into this season with Fails and Morgan as your backup quarterbacks and Darnold goes down, I don't want to hear anybody complaining because you see this coming a mile away right now, Chris.
No, you see it coming a mile away, but you put yourself at a slight disadvantage if you go into the season carrying three quarterbacks on the active roster. I mean, they're not going to cut James Morgan and try to bring him back on a practice squad. He's a fourth-round pick, so you know he's taking up one of your quarterback slots. I mean, are you really going to go out and add a veteran quarterback and have three quarterbacks for your active roster, or are you going to do something else? See, I don't know what Joe Douglas is thinking. Now, I know they are expanding roster sizes with the new CBA, so maybe it's not as much of a crunch, but, I mean, that is one of the things we talked about, getting a reliable backup quarterback this offseason, somebody that you can trust if Sam is unavailable to play, but also somebody that can help mentor Sam. I mean, don't forget, guys, we talked about Colt McCoy being a great backup option for Sam Darnold because he was a free agent, and the Giants ended up signing him. So you have to wonder what direction the Jets are going to turn in terms of being able to find a veteran guy that you can trust in a tight spot if he's got to play, but more importantly, can aid in the development of your young quarterback.
Yeah, here's the other thing, though, too. And I think, I mean, we heard this last year, and that's fine. I mean, whenever you criticized Adam Gase for having, I mean, what was maybe the most anemic offense you ever seen in your entire life when Sam went down. I mean, it was horrendous. It was beyond gross. But that was, okay, listen, I don't care how smart you are, how good at, you know, at your job you are, when you don't have good quarterbacks, you can't move. Okay, fine. I don't want to hear that this year. If you go into the season with these two quarterbacks as your backups, and for some reason Sam Darnold gets hurt, I don't want to hear that you can't criticize Adam Gase. I don't want to hear it.
Yeah, I agree.
You're making this decision, so you gotta ride with it then. It can't be an excuse.
Snuck up on us, or we didn't have an idea. I mean, the kid has had a couple injuries, and you don't have anything that gives you any semblance of confidence at the backup quarterback right now. If you had done what the Giants did and brought in Colt McCoy, I'd feel like you're in a much better standing than you are right now.
No question about it. Absolutely, 100% agree with you. But you didn't.
All right.
Because it's true. You got fails in Morgan.
Yeah, I don't know. I something has to change. And by
sounds
the way,
sounds like a injury attorney firm.
Yeah, they're following the ambulance. And Rick, you'd like to do a frenzy today as well, right?
Yeah, I think it's necessary.
Now, I don't want to say anything, but I will. The two of you went at each other like cats and dogs on Friday during the frenzy over the whole Packers drafting of Jordan Love, which is a wonderful conversation, but it was inappropriately timed. Can't go on during the frenzy.
I apologize.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
That was a mistake.
Okay.
It's all first time we had a frenzy in a while. You know what I mean?
Just felt like it might have taken away a little bit of the frenzy.
No, if anything, it made it a little more spicy, Dave.
Well, it's spicy,
yes. I don't think it takes away from the frenzy.
But the flow, it really.
Yeah, it interrupted the flow of the frenzy. But hey, man, some of the best conversations happen, you know, on the cuff, off the cuff. So, I mean, that's what happened.
Okay. 1210 frenzy today.
Okay.
800-919-3776. So, going about my business this morning, like I always do, getting ready for the show and looking for interesting nuggets anywhere I can find them. And on Twitter. And they have odds. And these sports books have odds on everything now. And I thought this was interesting, Chris. The odds for Cam Newton to New England have gone from plus 400 to minus 190. New England is now the prohibitive favorites to land Cam Newton, which I think is really interesting at this point.
Well, I think it's really interesting, too. I mean, that's something that Rick and I speculated could ultimately happen just because you knew Carolina was moving on from Cam. And because of the injury history and the way that the offseason has unfolded, you know, he's going to be a fallback option if Bill Belichick can't find what he's looking for in the draft or elsewhere. So it makes a whole lot of sense because Cam Newton is available, and you got to think as the weeks go by, the asking price will go down as well, and the Patriots will be able to make it fit under the cap. But hey, I don't think anybody has any confidence that the Patriots are going to go into the season with Jarrett Stidham as QB1. So an obvious place for Cam to land would be the New England Patriots, and I think everybody would be excited about it just to see how Bill Belichick will use him and what kind of offense they'll run.
Yeah, I think if you're in a situation too, and I mean, there's so much different speculation. I mean, do they love Jarrett Stidham? I mean, are they looking, you know, maybe past this year as more of a kind of reboot and then maybe address, I mean, they got a ton of draft picks, maybe address the quarterback position, you know, next draft. Make a run at Trevor Lawrence or who ends up, or Justin Fields. But I mean, if you don't have a ton of weapons, the way that, I mean, if he's healthy now, of course, if he's healthy, but I mean, Cam Newton as an option, I mean, what he does for your run game, his versatility, that would be, I mean, if you're trying to still compete to win your division, I mean, that probably would give you the best opportunity to do that.
Yeah, I think the Patriots are still competing to try to win the division. I don't think the Patriots are trying to tank for Trevor Lawrence or Justin Fields next year. I mean, how many years does Bill Belichick have where he can throw away? Keep in mind, he's still trying to catch Don Shula in terms of most wins for an NFL head coach. So I don't think that they're throwing away this season, which is why I find it hard to believe that Jarrett Stidham will be the starting quarterback week one.
So if it's not Stidham, then, I mean, you don't have a ton of options right now. I mean, if he's healthy and he passes the test, then wouldn't you assume that Cam Newton winds up in New England?
Well, it could be Cam Newton. It could be Andy Dalton. We'll see what happens, whether or not the Bengals are willing to trade him. All I'm saying is I don't think you could feel comfortable if you're a head coach that's trying to compete and win your division and get into the postseason with Jarrett Stidham or Brian Hoyer as your starting quarterbacks. I mean, even when Tom Brady stepped in, he wasn't the starting quarterback for that first year. Was Drew Bledsoe. So, I mean, I don't see Bill Belichick going into the season with just those two guys.
Yeah, I mean, you have one of the best defenses in football, and then you have, you know, arguably the greatest quarterback of all time. And the big concern was he didn't have enough weapons. Offense wasn't great. So, if you can't make it work with Tom Brady, I mean, to think you can make it work with Jarrett Stidham, it seems a little bit unrealistic.
Yes. With a completely unproven young quarterback that's never taken a real important snap in the NFL to hand him the keys to this team, it does feel strange. But you're right, Andy Dalton will be interesting there too.
It's a money thing though for the Patriots. I mean, depending on what they end up doing, I mean, salary cap wise, to try to fit in a certain amount of money would be difficult.
But that's the part of it that makes me feel like they're going to go after a veteran quarterback, Rick, because why would you have over $200 million in payroll if you're going to tank the season?
Well, I don't think you would. I mean, you're right. I think that Bill Belichick, I mean, again, if we're going to sit here and pretend, or if we're going to sit here and just, for some reason decide that we want to not really focus on one of the bigger reasons why Tom Brady maybe felt that he wanted to leave was to kind of put an end to, or at least try to prove that it was, you know, the conversation, who's more important, Belichick or Brady? I mean, Brady's set up. So, I mean, he's going to have success. Like Tampa, I mean, they had a great draft. He's set up to have success. I can't imagine that Bill Belichick's going to sit back and decide to take this year as the year where he's just going to, you know, let this thing go sideways and lose a bunch of games. That doesn't make any sense.
So who do you guys think would be the better option? If you get a healthy Cam Newton Andy
Cam
Dalton?
A healthy Cam Newton is a terrific quarterback. I would say that. I mean, healthy Cam Newton, healthy Andy Dalton, all things being equal, Cam Newton is clearly better. So for me, a healthy Cam Newton is absolutely the answer.
Rico?
I would probably lean him. I mean, not probably. I mean, Cam Newton, I mean, before he got hit by JT, what? Was 6-2. So, yeah. I mean, I think the versatility that he allows you to have, what he does for your run game, I think is probably more beneficial than the Red Rocket.
Yeah, see, to me, I look at it the same way. If you got a healthy Cam Newton, then that's another weapon that you have on the offensive side of the ball. And that does take some pressure off of those wide receivers. You know what I mean? Because you have Cam not just as the quarterback, but Cam as an actual runner. So, I mean, I think it's going to present more opportunities for one-on-ones for those receivers. Now, those guys got to be better, but I think having a quarterback as dynamic as Cam would add another element to that offense that Tom Brady just doesn't bring to the table.
So, yeah, I think, too, I mean, if you have, I mean, I don't think that, I mean, you lost some pieces on defense, but, I mean, again, it's Bill Belichick. He'll figure it out.
I think that defense will be just fine.
Well, I mean, let's face it. I mean, as good a head coach as he is, he could have been in the Hall of Fame as a defensive coordinator.
Yeah.
I mean, that's how good he was at
probably would
a
have
defensive
been.
Coordinator. Exactly right. So the defense will be good. I mean, best way to protect your defense is to keep them off the field, time of possession, run the football, which Cam Newton would help you do. And more importantly, I mean, get better in the red zone. And Cam Newton in the red zone, I mean, his ability to run, his size, I mean, I think it makes you better there too.
Rick, let me ask you a question. I got a tweet, and maybe I'm you know, a big Giants fan, we know that, but I think I'm somewhat fair in my analysis, and Chris as well. Tom tweets in, how is the Giants' offensive players, skill position players, better than the Jets? Crowder is just a younger Tate. Shepard is a concussion away from career ending. Engram is borderline getting traded, never healthy. Slayton is Perryman, and then the Jets have Mims. I don't know. I look at it, and maybe I'm wrong, but I look at it, and I think the Giants' skill position guys are far superior to what the Jets have right now.
Yeah, you got to stop it with that Crowder being a younger Tate. I mean, Crowder on his best day doesn't come close to what Golden Tate is. Golden Tate is one of the best run-after-catch receivers in the National Football League. Sterling Shepard's a really good slot receiver. And then what Darius Slayton showed in his rookie year, like he's a legitimate third option in the NFL. So I don't – and then Evan Engram is probably the most talented pass catcher on either team. So I don't understand what that person on social media is saying. That's absolutely ridiculous. The Giants' skill positions are by far better than the Jets.
Yeah, let's not overlook too the fact that they have Saquon Barkley and the Giants. I mean, and the Jets don't.
Right. And Darius Slayton had a terrific rookie season.
Yeah. I mean, again, but you're also talking about, I mean, the fact that, I mean, you heard what Chris said about Golden Tate. I mean, Sterling Shepard, I get it. I mean, he's a concussion away, but, I mean, let's not be negative about it. Evan Ingram, if he can stay on the field, is dynamic. You got Saquon Barkley. I mean, you got guys that are, I mean, for the most part, proven commodities, right? I mean, Denzel Mims as a number one option is not a proven commodity.
No.
Jameson Crowder's
more
fine.
Of a project than anything else.
Yeah, he's big. He runs fast. That's great. Well, I mean, problem with him was that he dropped the football a lot. Last time I checked, that's pretty important when you're a wide receiver. I mean, no one's trying to disparage what the Jets have or what they could potentially have, but at the moment, you can't sit here and tell me, I don't care how big a Jets fan you are, that the Jets have the same kind of weapons offensively that the Giants do. They don't.
So it's not just my Giants.
No, it's not you drinking the blue Kool-Aid, Dave.
I didn't think so. And then he said that. I was like, wait a minute, let me throw this by the guys because I want to make sure that I wasn't there. But no, really, and I said this earlier, and I stand by this. If you look at every team, 32 teams, and you rank the teams that have the least amount of talent as far as the skill position players are concerned, I think the Jets are towards the top of that. Really, Chris?
Yeah, they don't have a ton of talent at the skill positions. They really don't. I mean, it's bad. I mean, especially when you're trying to develop a young quarterback. I mean, I would probably say the same thing about Gardner Minshew down in Jacksonville. He doesn't have a ton of talent around him. But I mean, yeah, when teams have young quarterbacks, guys that they identify as their franchise quarterback, they try to surround them with a solid offensive line and as many weapons as they possibly can, especially early on when you've got them on a rookie contract because you've got the actual salary cap space to devote to bringing in high-priced free agents in your skill position core. But the Jets, they didn't opt to do that, and you thought, okay, if you're not going to do that, then you're going to draft him a lot of receivers that he can potentially grow with, and they didn't go down that direction either. So I just, you know, for a draft that was rich in wide receivers to only address the position once, I felt like it left a lot to be desired. But we'll have to take a wait-and-see approach.
You know what No, there's more than one, because, I mean, a bunch of teams had really good drafts. But, I mean, to your point as far as, you know, surrounding, you know, young quarterbacks with offensive talent, Cam Akers to the Rams was one of the picks that I really liked in this year's draft. That kid's he's a good running back. He's going to fit in nicely with McVay in that system. I like that a lot.
Look at on running backs in the second round that you saw and later.
Dude, how about, I mean, talk about, I mean, weapons. I mean, how about the Kansas City Chiefs getting Edwards-Helaire with the last pick in the first round?
It's unbelievable. But that was the first running back off the board.
I mean, Colts had a good draft. Really good draft. And they get Jonathan
Taylor.
The Colts.
I like what
pick.
The Colts did. I really like what the Chargers did as well.
Yeah, Chargers had a good draft. I feel like a lot of teams had pretty good drafts.
I would agree with that. There was only a handful of teams that at the end of this, and again, Mel's right. I mean, who knows? Right? Even Mel, who's an expert, this is what he does. He studies it nonstop. We don't know. I mean, he says Atlanta's the one team that he would kind of circle and say was head-scratching Green Bay as well. But we could get 3 years down the road and be like, boy, the Falcons did beautifully here, or the Raiders did amazingly well here. But right now, it feels, Chris, like more teams did well when you look at their drafts than the flip side of it.
No, I would agree with that. There are still a couple of teams, like you guys mentioned, that I don't know what the hell they're doing. Like, I know Mel loves Cole Kmet out of Notre Dame. He went to the Chicago Bears, but I don't really love what the Chicago Bears did in their draft. And then with the draft capital that the Raiders had, I there were some picks in there that I really don't understand. But, I mean, again, the draft is one of those things it's subjective. It's not a formula. It's not a, you know, it's one of those things where it's an imperfect science. And the teams that have a strong organizational structure in place, the teams that have infrastructure to develop young players, typically end up being the teams that look like they come out on top in the draft. Because when you revisit it 3 years from now, those will be the teams that give themselves the best chance at getting those draft picks to realize their full potential.
We have not discussed this. I don't know your guys' take on this, but I'm going to give you my take, and then Chris, you can react first, and then Rick, you can go secondarily. I'm not saying he won't be a terrific NFL quarterback, but the Eagles taking Jalen Hurts in the second round, to me, is just, it's awful. Because you're telling me one of two things. Either you have no confidence at all that Carson Wentz can ever stay healthy, and that's the thing that I take out of it, and this whole idea of, well, there's special packages that you could, you know, take Wentz out of the game and put Hurts in. And why would you ever want to take a guy that's you know, potentially a Pro Bowl, All Pro, you know, MVP in this league? I absolutely, and it's not because I don't like the Eagles. It's really not, because I think the Cowboys had a terrific draft. I cannot stand that pick from Philadelphia.
Well, here's the thing, Dave. I mean, I heard Howie Roseman give the breakdown on the NFL Network yesterday, and he said back in 2012 they had a strong grade on a guy that's playing quarterback in the NFL now at a really high level, and they tried to get too cute. They were going back and forth on whether or not to take him in the second round versus the third round. Long story long, they opted to use that second round pick on another player, and they tried to wait till the third, and the guy was off the board, and he vowed to himself in that moment that he would never do that again if he saw a guy at the quarterback position that was capable of having that kind of impact outside of the first round. And so I get why he did it. And I also understand Carson Wentz's reality. You're talking about a guy that's played 4 years for you, and he's only been healthy for all 16 in two of them. So you're going to have a quality backup option. And I think they look at Jalen Hurts as a really, really solid backup quarterback.
Yeah, here's the reality though, too, Dave. I mean, you can hate it.
I hate it.
But I mean, no, that's fine. You can hate it. But they did. I mean, they did address the wide receiver position. They did get Carson Wentz weapons as opposed to Green Bay not drafting a wide receiver. So, I mean, similar, but I mean, I think you mentioned it and Chris mentioned it. I mean, the biggest concern for the Philadelphia Eagles, and you saw this run to the Super Bowl, was with Nick Foles. I mean, you saw Carson Wentz with the concussion last year. Is his, I mean, ability to stay healthy and stay on the field. You don't have to worry about taking him off the field. I mean, he does that for you because he's always hurt. And maybe this gives you the opportunity to run, maybe not a package, but have a certain, you know, number of plays that involve the quarterback running the football, and you'd rather not have that be Carson Wentz because you're afraid, you're petrified that he's going
to
get hurt.
Well, Rick, look at how valuable Taysom Hill is to the New Orleans Saints. I mean, you could absolutely see Hurts developing into that kind of guy, not maybe on the special teams part of it, but certainly on the offensive side of it, being able to have packages, being able to have things that he does that forces the defense to spend time preparing for that, and that also helps your starting quarterback. So I think that the Hurts move makes a lot of sense for a lot of different reasons. I know it could be a little rich because you used the 53rd overall pick on him. But, I mean, Dave, you got to have a quality backup in this league. You just have to. I mean, you're talking about a team that won the Super Bowl a couple of years ago because they had a quality backup. So I think that Howie Roseman recognizes the value in that, and that's why he went that direction.
Yeah, look, I understand it, but it's also, for me, it's terrifying. Because if I'm an Eagles fan, they're basically telling me we have absolutely no conviction, none whatsoever, Chris, that this quarterback can stay healthy at all.
Well, I think they have some conviction. I mean, they're paying Carson Wentz $34 million a year. So they believe in the player, but
when he's healthy, he's terrific. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, but they've got to have some insurance, Dave. I mean, you buy the mansion, but you're still going to have homeowner's insurance. I think that's exactly what this pick is for the Eagles. I mean, you got Carson Wentz. He's your franchise guy. I mean, the team was 5-7 and he dragged them kicking and screaming to the playoffs. So, I mean, the guy is showing you that he can get it done even when there's not a ton of talent around him. But if he does go down, we do have somebody that can step in and be more than capable.
And he's a cheaper option too, Dave. I mean, when you're paying your quarterback, your starting quarterback that much money in a salary cap sport, I mean, to have a competent backup is huge. And usually competent backups cost you more than what Jalen Hurts is going to make over the next 4 years.
Look, I like Jalen Hurts. I think he's going to be a good NFL quarterback. I was just perplexed at why you would take him with that rich of a draft pick in the second round when you obviously have needs if you're.
Well, because you just said it. I mean, you just said it's the most important position in sports. And the reality is you love the player when he's healthy, but Carson Wentz has not been able to stay healthy. That would make me, I mean, that would, I mean, when you dump that much money into your team and you feel like you're a team that can compete, you know, to win a championship, the last thing you'd want to have happen is Carson Wentz get hurt and your season's over. It's not what you want to have happen. And by the way, can I just say this? And I hope I'm not the only one that feels this way. I almost think it's disrespectful to Jalen Hurts to mention him in the same category as Taysom Hill as a quarterback. Jalen Hurts was a much better quarterback than Taysom Hill ever was.
Oh, no question about it. But I'm just talking about in terms of the value of a player that can come in and he's got a quarterback skill set, but he can also do other things.
No, I don't
disagree. I'm just talking about the value of Taysom Hill to the New Orleans Saints. It could be comparable to the value that you see in Jalen Hurts with the Philadelphia Eagles early on.
Well, he'll have an immediate impact.
Right? Yes, you can actually, no question
you'll
about
see
it.
Him on the field as opposed to Jordan Love, where you're not going to, you're not going to ever see him on the field.
Yeah.
Unless Aaron Rodgers gets hurt.
No.
So that's how I'm saying it. I don't think that that's being disrespectful to Jalen.
No, I'm not saying how you said it. You said it the right way. But listening to people talk about the pick, and then, Jalen Hurts was the runner-up for the Heisman as a quarterback. They're just like, he'll be like Taysom Hill. Well, time out. Taysom Hill was never the quarterback that Jalen, I think it's disrespectful. Like, Jalen Hurts could develop into, what makes Jalen Hurts that much different than Dak Prescott?
Nothing.
I think Jalen Hurts is probably a guy that you would consider more talented than Dak Prescott coming out of college. No question about it.
I mean, Taysom Hill's almost 30 years old. So I think it's a little bit different, but I get what you're saying. I agree with what you're saying. It bothered me for some reason the way people were talking about Jalen Hurts.
I agree with you. The resume speaks for itself. Jalen Hurts started 42 games and only lost four of them.
They just signed Jameis Winston down in New Orleans, so clearly they don't look at Taysom Hill as a legitimate quarterback.
No, I don't think Taysom Hill is a legitimate quarterback. I think he's a package guy, and you're going to have somebody else be your quarterback option, in terms of, who's going to be the guy under center if Drew Brees goes down. It's not going to be Taysom Hill. It wasn't Taysom Hill last year. It was Teddy Bridgewater. If Drew Brees goes down again, it's not going to be him this year. It'll be Jameis Winston. So, I think Taysom Hill in the role that he's in New Orleans brings a tremendous amount of value because he does have a quarterback skill set, among other things. But I don't think he's ever going to be your starting quarterback every single game. Whereas Jalen Hurts, I think, can develop into a guy that can be your starting quarterback every single game.
100% agree.
DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg. Weekdays at 10 on 98.7 ESPN.